Welcome to Enjoy Exceptional Living. I am the program host and producer, Lynn Fritz, coming to you via the studios of KLXR 1230 AM from the heart of downtown Reading. This program, this weekly program, is a collaboration between Enjoy Magazine, KLXR 1230 AM Radio, and myself, Lynn Fritz, a private practice psychotherapist, all three of us working together to create programs about people and organizations in the North State. Today, our program features Shasta Wildlife Rescue and Rehabilitation, and with me, joining me today, is Irish Robertson, Executive Director, and Carlene Stoker, who's a board member. So I'm going to ask Carlene to start us off telling us a little bit about who is or what is Shasta Wildlife Rescue and Rehabilitation.
Our group, and I'm going to make it a SWRR for short, we treat injured, sick, and orphaned wildlife in the North State. And through our education programs, we go out into the community and try to let people know how they can live and keep the area that they live in with their natural wildlife and coexist together.
And aren't you guys a nonprofit organization?
Yes.
You're on the board, so there must be a nonprofit.
Yes, we are definitely a nonprofit.
And how long have you been in existence?
Since 1979. We were part of Carter House in the beginning where they had resident animals. And then people would find sick and orphaned and injured animals and start bringing them in there. And the volunteers at the time decided that they needed to form their own group to be able to help all these animals. So then they formed Shasta Wildlife Rescue at that time.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, Irish, what's your role as executive director?
I do the administrative end. I'm responsible for marketing, public relations, advertising, media kind of connections, fund development and fundraising, and just having that contact with the community.
So tell me how this works. You have an injured animal. I mean, how do people relate to you? How's the common person relate to you?
If they find an injured, sick, or orphaned animal,
domestic as well as wild?
No, it's strictly wildlife.
Wildlife.
Strictly wildlife, yes. Any little thing running around in the woods, that's us.
Okay.
Dog, cats, chickens, that's, you know, Haven and the other organizations. But you find a little animal, and if you don't know about us, I believe we're listed in the Yellow Pages under wildlife, if you don't know our name, of course. Another way of finding us is if you call Haven and say, hey, I've got this little bird, I don't know what it is, they have our telephone number. Many of the veterinarians in the community have our telephone number because they're not allowed to actually touch the wildlife unless it comes through us. Mm. So they will give out our telephone number. And actually, the Sheriff's Department and Dispatch also has our number, too. So I've gotten calls from home when they've called the 911 on an injured animal and they give out our telephone number. So that's great. So there are ways of people getting a hold of us.
Now, you said that they're not allowed to touch the wildlife. Can you explain that?
Many of the veterinarians don't have they haven't had the proper training to treat wild animals. They're not like dogs and cats. They have a higher metabolism. A lot of the antibiotics that the domestic animals take does not work on the wildlife. Since the wildlife is very stressed, I mean, you hold an animal, they could virtually faint in your hands, mm-hmm. and that has happened. So you have to know how to hold them, how to treat them, how to, you know, and not only the antibiotics, but the, I forget the stuff that puts them down so that they can hold still for anesthesia, mm-hmm. so they can hold them down for x-rays if they have a broken wing or a broken leg. So you have to know the type of medications to use for wildlife. So, you know, between a few of our vets that have experienced that and some that actually go through veterinarian school for wildlife medicine, They know how to do that. So, actually, I think it's against the law for a veterinarian to actually treat a wildlife animal unless it goes through a rehab facility.
I see. Now, think of our listeners. They're hearing you talk about this. If they see an injured animal that looks like it's struggling, what do you suggest that they do?
Depending on the type of animal, if it's a small, say a squirrel, might have got hit by a car. And, of course, they don't want to touch it if it's an adult because it could bite them. If they can put a box over it to keep it mobile and give us a call, hopefully we'll have somebody in the vicinity to go out because you have to wear gloves and you have to know how to handle them. If it's a baby animal, then we can talk them through that. Most of the time, if it needs help, you can pick up a baby and bring it to. But if you call on the phone, we can analyze the situation, because we want the public to be safe. We don't want them touching any wildlife because they can get bit, or if they're a rabies vector animal, you know, then they'd have to go through the series shots, and we definitely don't want them to do that. But so the best thing that they can do is just give us a call first so we can figure out what they should do.
So really what you're encouraging people to do is don't try picking it up. It might be too dangerous. If you can put a box over to kind of keep it in place till you can get there, that's a good idea. So who do they call? Do they call 911? Do they call you directly? How's that work?
They call 365-WILD, or the numbers are 365-9453.
So that's for Shasta Wildlife Rescue and Rehabilitation. Its number again is?
365-WILD.
365-WILD, W-I-L-D. And if they want to get more information about who you are as an organization, they can go on your website.
Yes.
And that website address is
ShastaWildlifeRescue.com. So it's all one word, ShastaWildlifeRescue.com. And we have our history pages on there, pictures of the animals that we've treated, all the information you need in case you also want to become, if you're interested in becoming a volunteer or a member, we have all that information on there. It's a great website.
I want to ask you some more about that, because I think it's important for people to know how they can relate, not only if they find an injured animal, but I think it's important to know what happens to the injured animal, and also if they want to participate as a volunteer and get involved, whether it's hands-on or through fundraising. Irish, can you clarify some of that for us?
Yes, it's really exciting, actually. It's there are so many aspects of working down at the center, and without the volunteers, it just wouldn't happen. They are the cog. The machinery would not run without. So we really appreciate our volunteers. You can call the Wildlife Center, the Rescue Center, or you can go online and get information about volunteering. And some people go, I don't want to feed animals. Well, you don't have to. You can help in the kitchen with kitchen duties or cleanup, or some people like to do gardening. Some people are into construction and they help us. You know, we always have needs around the facility, rebuilding cages or just making it more comfortable for the animals. And we do everything we can not to interact humanly with the animals, because we want to keep them in their regular habitat, and so that they don't get what we call imprinted. We don't want them to start becoming attached to us as human beings.
Dependent.
Yes.
Upon you. So imprinting is becoming attached and dependent upon humans. And why is that a bad thing? I mean, they're, you know.
Because they're wildlife. And one of the main goals of the Shasta Rescue and Rehabilitation is to rescue them, of course, rehabilitate them, fix them all up. And then we want them to be reintroduced to their natural habitats, so that if they're used to being cuddled by a human or receiving regular treats or foods and things like that, then they tend to want to come back. And we've heard stories about that in, like, national parks and things like that, where wild animals are fed and so on. And then they feel perfectly comfortable coming right into your domain and trying to involve themselves with your life, which we don't want them to do. They have to live their life out in the wild, and we live our lives here.
So you really want them to remain wild.
Yes.
Because that's the natural order for them in that way. Now, Shasta Wildlife Rescue and Rehabilitation, before I forget, it seems like when you two first came in the studio, you were talking about this is the time of year when the major fundraiser is coming up. Is that true? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. We have two major fundraisers. This one that's coming up soon is on November 6th. It's called Art on the Wild Side, and it's artists of all kinds of media. Used to be they were artists who specialized in just wildlife kind of things, mm-hmm. But now we're broadening that scope because it's just wild art, you know,
mm-hmm.
And it's a fun event with the artists representing their work. We will have the event at the Wind River Event Center on November 6th from noon until 6 o'clock in the evening, and it will include all kinds of things like live music, some very interesting wood carving, different media of artists, and we will have a live auction, and the auctioneer will be Dr. Ray John, the CEO from Haven Humane, and we'll have some silent auction items as well.
So the purpose of that particular event on November 6th, noon to 6 p.m. at Wind River Event Center, is to be able to, what, the proceeds benefit your organization?
Yes. So the way we make our money, Shasta Wildlife, is by having the artists rent their booths, and then we sell tickets to the event, which, by the way, we'd like to be able to donate some tickets that you can give away later. The artists who do display their work, they get the proceeds from the sale of their work, so we don't interfere with that at all.
So a couple ways people can get involved. They can be an artist that will be a vendor, basically mm-hmm. rent a booth from you, and by renting the booth you generate revenue, and they
Correct.
Find a place to be able to present their art.
Mm-hmm.
And then from the auctions, you're generating revenue. The items that you're auctioning, those are art pieces, a whole spectrum, or?
Yes, we really are delighted when our artists offer one or more of their pieces to be auctioned. Of course, that's excellent advertising for them as well, because their art piece goes out with their name on it and so on. But we also have some wonderful business persons in the community that are donating things for us to auction off, which is superb. We just really appreciate it.
Well, I think that's a good point, too. If there's artists in the community, they can get involved by donating a piece
yes.
for the auction to help the wildlife that are needing attention and treatment
mm-hmm.
to be returned back. And then, of course, there's the people that can attend the event.
Yes.
Ah, yeah. So how about volunteers to help facilitate the event? Do you need volunteers to help facilitate the event, or are you pretty well covered?
I think we're pretty well covered within our volunteer, within our volunteers themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Our board members have been very active. We will be kind of hosting the event and be around and welcome folks and show them what we have for our auction items and so on. We'll have some spotters for the auction itself and things like that. So.
Wonderful. So, question back here for the other guest here, Carlene. If somebody wants to get involved as a volunteer, how do they do that? I mean, obviously there's board position. How long's a term on your board if you're going to be a board director?
We like to tease each other. It's for life.
Yeah.
But currently we don't have a set term limit. It's kind of like however long you want to be on there and help the organization and participate. If anybody wants to become a volunteer, our main volunteer base is volunteering down at the center. When the center is open from mid-April to the end of August, we have three shifts a day, from 8 to 12, 12 to 4, and 4 to 8. Now, the baby birds, baby songbirds, are the ones that are housed down at the center, and the animals are also received down there at that time. So, people...
where's that at? Where's that?
That's down in Anderson River Park.
Anderson River Park.
Right.
Okay.
So, if you decide to be a volunteer and want to feed the baby birds and help down there, and there's also raptors, which are the hawks and the eagles that are down there, too, the primary thing is feeding the baby birds 12 hours from 8 to 8, and they get fed every 20 minutes.
Wow.
So in the baby room, usually by the time you finish feeding them, it's time to start all over again because you're not just feeding them, but what goes in has to come out. So every time you feed them, you have to change their little basket.
Yeah.
So that's the main group of volunteers that we have. When the center is closed from September to the middle of April, we still have people that monitor the phones every 2 hours every day, because taking care of animals is 365 days
yes.
a year job.
They don't wait.
So the animals then go home, the ones that need the care, because then the babies, except for the mammals, the babies have stopped. But now we're getting into juveniles that, you know, aren't quite sure what to do out there in the wild. They're not as successful hunting as their parents. So sometimes we get in starving juvenile hawks and eagles and stuff. So we take care of them, fatten them up, teach them how to hunt successfully, and then release them back again.
Well, I'm going to ask you a couple more questions about that whole process, but I want to, for anyone that's tuning in for the first time today, we have Irish Robertson, Executive Director from Shasta Wildlife Rescue and Rehabilitation, along with Carlene Stoker, who's a board member for that organization, telling us all about what they're about, how to get involved, and some of their upcoming fundraising events, as well as what they do throughout the entire year. Now, I'm sure there are some animals that no matter how well they're taken care of, you can't put back in the wild. What happens to those?
And that happens a lot, because you have a lot of cat-caught birds and small mammals. You have the birds and animals that get hit by cars. The birds get electrocuted. The ones that cannot be rehabilitated and released back into the wild, if they're an animal that qualifies to be an educational animal to go in our program, we can do that.
What's that
but
mean?
That's only a few.
Educational program.
Our educational program consists mostly of hawks and owls, and we have a fox, and until recently we had a king snake. He died of old age after about 19 years.
So you have those different animals in there, and I'm sure it changes all the time, but what do you mean by the educational program?
Okay, the educational program, we have animals that were rehabilitated but could not be released into the wild, mainly because of broken wings.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of the hawks, you know, might have a blind eye, and so they would starve back out in the wild. So we have to get permission from Fish and Wildlife and Fish and Game, California Fish and Game, to have them in our educational program. And what that is our group of people go out into the community, and they go into classrooms, and they bring the animals with them and talk about the natural history of the animal, show the animal, and people can get up close and personal with the animal, 5 feet. That's pretty close, considering you couldn't get that close to them in the wild.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. So really, if you carry the whole spectrum. You have those that you can rehabilitate and return to the wild. For those that you cannot do that with, you put them into a program where really you're developing the public's awareness of the animal, I would think respect for the animal. I think just what you were sharing earlier about not touching, how it imprints them, is an important aspect. Iris, do you have something to share?
Well, yeah, I was just going to add, for instance, we had some of our educational animals here recently at the Business Expo, and we were careful to make sure that people were able to see them, but at the same time not get so close that they frighten them or cause them distress that would cause them to become nervous or elevate their heart rate or something like that, but the public really loves to meet our little educational animals and know what they're about, and it's quite a process to know how important the wild animals are to us, every one of us.
Mm-hmm. I actually didn't realize that about veterinarians, not, you know, it's a specialized skill, that not every vet has the capacity, the educational training to be able to handle. Wild
yeah, it's amazing. Their metabolism is so different from our domestic animals. They have a much, much higher metabolism, and not all the medicines work with them, or, you know, it can't kill them. So our veterinarians have to know what to do. They really have to be well-versed in that.
Yeah. When you think about Northern California in Redding, the summers are very warm, very hot. Then we have the extreme of the cold, sometimes snowy winters, not often, but sometimes, with lots of wind and rain, and we have our springs and our fall. So there are different seasons of the year that I would think would create different demands or impact upon wildlife. So you mentioned earlier April through August is when the centers open. What about the other time of the year? Is there any activities going on?
Well, the other time of the year for the animals, like I said, we have on call. We have a person on call every day of the week. They monitor the phones every 2 hours, and then they have their list of people that are species specific. So if somebody calls in and the squirrel got hit by a car, they'll call the squirrel team leader, okay, what should we do? And that person will call the person back and handle the situation and however it needs to be done. If a hawk was hit by a car or electrocuted, they will call the team leader of the raptor team, mm-hmm. and they would either, you know, they would figure out what to do, go out and rescue it or whatever. So we have people that monitor the phones every day from 8 in the morning till 8 in the evening.
That's pretty dedicated. And these are all volunteers?
And we're all volunteers, yes.
Wow, that's yep. extraordinary. I yep. like this. Now, training. If you're a volunteer and you have no skill level, or you want to be a volunteer and get involved, do you provide training?
Yes, we do. Before the center opens in April, we have a major training session for new volunteers coming in and any of the older volunteers that want to be refreshed with the new techniques coming up that have been discovered during the year. They can go to the training class. And then, of course, if you're down at the center, that's on-the-job training because you're not just feeding the babies, but you're also feeding the food to the raptors. You're also making up food in the kitchen. You're also cleaning them. You get to greet the public coming in and see what animal is coming in and how to take, and you're learning how to take care of it. So it's very hands-on.
See, I didn't realize that you had the public coming in.
Yes, we have at the center. We have the public coming in, and we have a reception desk and a computer. And every animal that comes in gets logged into our computer because we have to register every animal through Fish and Game. We have to send in a report at the end of every year on how many animals, what type of animals, and what their outcome was. And we have the permits through Fish and Game and Fish and Wildlife. We wouldn't be allowed to exist. None of the rehab centers in California would be allowed to exist if we didn't have these permits.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it really protects the animals and protects, you know, stewardship.
And they give us the guidelines and what we can and can't do. And although we don't get any funding from them, but we have to abide by their rules and regulations because they have domain over all the all the animals. Birds, mammals, even reptiles.
Wow. It sounds like you have an amazing volunteer group that's very dedicated, around the clock, all seasons.
Yeah. I don't think there's too many organizations that can say they function 24 hours a day, 365 days a week.
Yes.
I mean, a year.
Volunteers. Mm-hmm. Now, how far? It says Shasta. Do you only serve Shasta County, or is it beyond that?
No, we serve like 5 or 6 different counties.
Okay.
We're the only major wildlife rehab center in, I mean, Trinity County, Shasta, Tehama, Lassen, Siskiyou. We even get calls from down by Chico sometimes, too, and we have to arrange transportation for them to meet us somewhere kind of halfway.
So you're really kind of home base out of Redding,
right.
out of Shasta County, but you serve the northern area.
Right.
Wow, that's wonderful. So volunteers, all this work you're doing, you have the one fundraiser in November. Is there another fundraiser that comes up?
Yes, at the first part of April, to kind of kick off the season, we have Run for the Wild, and it's a five-mile run, or a two-mile walk. And there again, it's the entrance the entrance fee that helps facilitate the center. And really, it's a very popular event. A lot of people come down there and want to run or walk, and kind of a festive party atmosphere. And then when the run part is over, we open up the center for a baby shower. Because, you know, when you've got babies coming, you know, you have lots of needs. So we have a list of our needs, and then ask people if they'll bring us a gift for the center, and then they can come in and see what the center looks like, how we're going to function for the year, and what they might be able to do. Sometimes we get volunteers from that, and sometimes we get donations, and that's how we get our name out of it.
The other big fundraiser for the year. So that's really nice, because then it really fits for everyone. If you're a runner, that's great, but if mm-hmm. you're not, you can walk.
Yep.
And the entrance fees benefits these animals, wildlife in our northern region, and they can participate in a really nice event. That's pretty exceptional.
And our needs list is different. I was surprised to know the variety of things that could be used down that you wouldn't think of. I mean, of course, everybody probably thinks of seed and, you know, maybe some food for the raptors and whatnot. But gosh, when my husband, for instance, caught way too many fish one time, and we just took them down there because the raptors eat those fish. They need fresh, you know, freshly caught fish, so that's kind of nice.
Which is also another way people can get involved, if they have something that's fresh like that, that they can share with you.
Or a big product that we use is beef heart. Mm-hmm. And so if we had an outlet for that, that would be awesome.
Beef heart.
That's
unusual. So if someone's butchering a cow.
Exactly. And, you know, the parts that a lot of people might not need or want, right, we could probably use. And then, of course, turkey vultures, they eat, like, when, every once in a while we get a call from California Highway Patrol about a dead deer, and then we're able to go pick up the deer and use that meat then for our turkey vultures and the other raptors. So it's kind of a cycle.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I like that partnership with everyone involved, so that they're really trying to work together to benefit the wildlife and sustain them. Because I don't know about you, I wouldn't want to be those guys. Can you imagine trying to fend for food all the time, and then if you're injured, how that would intensify that?
Exactly.
Yeah, if you're injured, if you're injured, you can't. You just wind up starving to death.
Right.
So, you know, we're really trying to help these guys have a second chance.
Yeah. I think that's what's the important message here. Your work allows the wildlife to have a second chance to be out back, you know, recover from the injury, go back to the wild, or live out a life that helps with the education of us humans and how to relate to them. Well, we're going to take a brief four-minute break and hear from our sponsors and advertisers, but we're going to return here into the studio with Irish Robertson, Executive Director, and Carlene Stoker, Board Member for the Shasta Wildlife Rescue and Rehabilitation. So we're going to ask you to tune back in to enjoy exceptional living. I want to welcome you back to the second segment of Enjoy Exceptional Living. Today we have in the studio Irish Robertson, Executive Director, and Carlene Stoker, Board Member for the Shasta Wildlife Rescue and Rehabilitation. I am your program host and producer, Lynn Fritz. And this program, Enjoy Exceptional Living, is a partnership and collaboration between myself, Enjoy Magazine, and KLXR 1230 AM radio from the heart of downtown Reading. So, Iris, just before we went to break, we were talking a little bit, just started to talk about the needs list. Needs list being things that you invite the public to either donate towards or perhaps gift to your organization. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? What is it you're needing?
Okay. And I'm always surprised and intrigued by the variety of the list of things that you wouldn't think of. But small baskets, the plastic variety, we were able to keep our baby birds in that with a little nesting material. And we make that out of toilet paper or paper towel or Kleenex. And that, as Carlene mentioned, gets changed every 15 or 20 minutes after they've eaten.
So small baskets?
The kind that you might use for craft projects, about 4x6.
You want plastic?
Size of plastic or even a small, almost looks like a laundry basket, but a little, you know, but smaller, maybe 9x12-ish. And we put mesh on that so that, of course, they can't get out.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're kept there so that they're hands-free and so on, so that they can rest and recuperate. And things like even stir sticks, you know, like from coffee stir sticks.
Mm-hmm.
We can use that to use the meat mixtures, and they eat grub worms, so you can touch their little ground-up meat mixture with a grub worm, and then they eat it right off of that stick. So there's no touching from the hands, a human standpoint. Pipettes, we use the not needles, of course, but the parts of, like, the syringe where the plastic part in, we can draw in some of the more liquid form of bird food.
What'd you call that?
Pipettes.
Oh, okay. I'm not familiar with that term.
Yeah, well, and sometimes those little birds are so tiny, and those are probably come from places like doctor's offices or
vets or
dentists, where they have a surplus or some extra items that they're willing to donate to the center, things that we could use to then, you know, help the birds or the other animals as well.
Mm-hmm.
But we need things like we've even used adult diapers, not the plastic part that gets discarded, but then the inside can be used for nesting.
Ah.
Sand, seeds, and of course things that we can use to help around the area to keep that. We use grass seed, you know, to have more foliage and so on for the bird rooms and so on in the aviaries.
Detergent.
And alcohol, not the drinking variety, but...
Rubbing alcohol.
Yeah. And hydrogen peroxide, those kinds of things. And if you have any listeners who are thinking about, gee, I don't want this mesh side baby thing anymore, the cribs or the little carriers or whatever, we can also adapt those to putting in some larger birds and so on. We put a net meshing over the top.
Ah, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Some of the large bird crows are really, even their babies are really large.
Uh-huh.
They're like a big chicken, size-wise.
So how about any fencing or wiring for larger animals?
Mm-hmm.
Or,
yeah, mesh and all of that stuff we can use.
Okay, that's good. So they call you. Which number do they call?
365 Wild, which is 365-9453. Or in the case of a donation, they're certainly welcome to call the administrative office, and I can help take care of that.
So you can do a donation by credit card. They can mail you a check.
Check or cash or money order type thing. We don't have a credit card.
No credit card, but if they were to want to send you a check in the mail after listening to this program, they could make it out to Shasta Wildlife Rescue and Rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. What address would they send that to?
Post Office Box 1173, Anderson, California, 96007.
And I suspect you probably take anything they're willing to share.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. So anything else on your needs list that's special?
Well, I noticed that one of the items we're looking for is a large an upright freezer, because if we have to get meat and keep that kind of thing for the animals.
So upright freezer, mm-hmm. You would like that as well.
And during the growing season, we've put out requests for fruits and vegetables, and we have a great number of people in the area who do the farmers markets and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And of course they want to present their very best stuff, and so what do they do with the stuff that doesn't look as pretty or it's got a lump on it and they don't really want to sell it at market? We'll be happy to take that, because that's what we feed our animals with.
That's good to know.
They don't care how pretty it is.
Right. So that's really excellent to know. And I know in the first segment of the show, you had also mentioned this kind of interesting, exotic sort of thing that most people wouldn't have, but there may be the exception of someone butchers a cow. The beef hearts, mm-hmm. is a special need that you have. It's probably really difficult to get.
Yes.
Okay, that's good to know.
And expensive. And
help
we have
cut
to purchase
costs.
That.
Okay. Shasta Wildlife Rescue and Rehabilitation. Now, I wanted to find out about membership as well. Can you talk about membership and how does one, what's the point of membership? What's membership do for the organization?
Well, the membership is mostly a contribution of a supporting member. It's unlike many clubs or organizations or such that you might think, okay, well, if I get into this, what do I have to do? Just knowing that you've been a supporting contributor is great for us, because we depend on those. We have all level of business of supporters, $20 for an individual or $30 for a family. And $75 is one of our better ones, is the $75, and this is a yearly membership for our business members. And with a business membership of $75, they can put their business logo on our website.
That's excellent.
It's a nice cross connect with the community. Again, the community looks at our website and sees their logo, and knowing that there's a connection in the community with those business people.
That's very nice. So membership helps support the organization. It's a way for people to get involved. Do you know how big your membership is? Do you know? Do you track that, or is that not so?
About 300, 350. And we also would welcome the larger donations, obviously, the you know, the 500, the lifetime memberships, that kind of thing. But we are not supported or paid. We receive no funds from any government or anything like that. So everything has to come from our supporters.
From giving, from people giving. Not only of time, the volunteers, but financially for the things that, you know, you just, practical things, food, and things you need to care for the animals. I'm going to ask you, Carlene, to think about sharing with our listeners again. I think the thing that I didn't realize in asking you to come into the studio, that you serve the larger area, not just Shasta County, reminding people about that. Do you, in those, does everything home base out of Redding, or do you have people that live in outer line areas? Can they live like in Burney and get involved and serve that area?
We actually have people in Shingletown that come down. We have a couple people that live in Burney that we call on. They might not be able to make it into the center to work down there, but we have them based out there. We've got a group out in Eagleville. They're the only ones out.
I don't even know where that's at.
Yeah, neither do I. But, but it takes them about 3 hours to get here when we have special meetings, so you know it's pretty far out. It's east, northeast or something like past our first, I think.
Eagleville.
Mm-hmm. I'm not even sure where that is. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, most of the people are in Redding, Anderson, and Cottonwood. And there are a few people, I think, from Red Bluff. So...
But
everything
is
based pretty much here.
Okay.
And those are the people who call satellite centers, and they do home care.
And everything you do exists at the permission and permitting of Fish and Game.
Yes. Yes. They're in charge of all the wildlife in California. Each state has their own government facility that regulates all rehabilitation. They all have different rules, and so we're of course under the California Fish and Game Department, and Fish and Wildlife is the federal, and they're over all the birds, because the birds migrate from state to state. They don't stay in one spot.
Mm-hmm.
So they're regulated by the federal government. The mammals and the reptiles and amphibians are regulated by the state of California. But we still have to have our permit through the California Fish and Game. It does get a little confusing.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, it's kind of hard to grasp when you're talking about it. So.
But we have an MOU, which is a Memorandum of Understanding through the California Fish and Game, and we have to abide by those specific rules.
Mm-hmm.
But like I was saying, our educational people, when they have their hawks and owls, they have to get their special permit not only by California Fish and Game, but by Fish and Wildlife, because they are birds.
Now, you know, we talked about your goal is to return animals to the wild once they've recovered from their injury, and that there are those that, because of their injuries, can never return to the wild, and use them part of your educational program. Do you ever have so many that they go into someone else's educational program?
If a bigger animal that we deem has the personality, and they have to have the personality, so
imagine.
We can't save everyone, and many of them have to be put down, because if we cannot release them back into the wild or use them in an educational program, they have to unfortunately be put down. But that's a quality of life thing. They're not going to want to survive when they can't do their natural thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to have the type of personality where they tolerate people and crowds, and then those are the ones that can be put in an educational program.
Mm-hmm. How did you guys come into being? I mean, somebody had this wonderful, extraordinary idea that developed and became an organized group of individuals. Do either one of you know how that came into being?
Well, like I said before, the Carter House Museum, mm-hmm. before they became part of Turtle Bay, and just the Carter House building is now a museum. But Carter House Museum had, I guess they had animals on exhibit. I'm not quite sure. I wasn't up here at that time. And the volunteer...
It used to be down at Caldwell Park.
Caldwell Park.
And had, I can remember the chinchilla, and they had a turtle. I used to, when people would come to town, I would take them there to experience the animals. And then, of course, that was integrated into what we know today as Turtle Bay Exploration Park.
Okay, so they did have animals on exhibit there.
Yeah.
Apparently, you know, when people found an animal, they naturally brought it there, thinking that, of course, they can help. So the volunteers at Carter House said, okay, well, we need to start our own organization. And in 1979, they did that. They formed Shasta Wildlife Rescue and Rehabilitation. So what they did was initially they took the animals home and took care of them in their homes.
Wow.
Then when Haven was up on Placer, they gave them a trailer there and space, and so they became a facility on the property of Haven. Then Haven went through and sold their property on Placer, and I guess they relocated off 273. So then that meant the animals and the volunteers had to go back to working out of their home. And in 1991, one of the founders of the organization got a major grant, $170,000 grant, I believe it was, to build a facility. And the Anderson Parks Department graciously allowed us to build a facility in their park, and that's the current site that's there today.
Wow. So in a sense, that's also a partnership, because Anderson really opened their doors for you to
exactly
be in that
to be there. And of course, they get the recognition as being able to have the rehab center, the only rehab center in Northern California, too. So I think they have us on their website.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Because I think it's challenging for people. It's easy to overlook who you are and what you're doing. So that was part of the reason Enjoy Magazine wanted to feature in their October issue of the magazine who you are, because you do exceptional work and it's a contribution that's unique. I mean, how many wildlife rescue and rehabilitation centers are there? There aren't a lot. And so our intention with inviting you in the studio is so that we could have a deeper conversation with you than the magazine pages would allow.
And we really appreciate all of you trying to get the word out about us, because a lot of people, when they come into the center and drop off the animals, they go, you know, we didn't know about you guys. So the more we get the word out, the more, you know, we can help you, we can help the animals. So we really appreciate all your effort.
And on your educational programs, do people come to the center to see those, or are any of those mobile? Where are those presented? How's that set up?
Those can be presented in a variety of ways. I would say the majority of them are schools, where a school has called up and they want their class or classes to see wildlife and how the interaction of the humans and wildlife, what that looks like. And so they call us, and we set up an education team to bring a variety of animals, explain to them about their wildlife and their, for instance, we have Spike, who's an albino Steller's Jay. He was found when he was probably the size of a chicken egg.
So is that like a blue jay?
Well, he's a Steller's Jay. Now, the blue jays have the white front, the little white tuxedo bib, but the Steller's Jay have more of that dark blue color and a little spiky top knot, and that's how he got his name. And he was absolutely albino, with pink eyes and no, is it melanin or melatonin?
Melanin.
That makes his little feathers brittle, but he was rescued because he was kicked out of his nest by his own kind, and then the other birds were trying to kill him because he didn't fit in.
Mm-hmm.
So he was healed, but of course he's not releasable. That's one of those wonderful stories. Not releasable due to the fact that he would not survive.
Mm-hmm.
The sun would get him. His eyes wouldn't last. His feathers wouldn't support what they're supposed to do for a bird and so on and so forth. So Spike gets to go out and interact with the community. He's not in the way that he gets pet or anything of that nature, but they talk about him, and we have some great volunteers that are just so knowledgeable about what happens, how these things come about. Patty, one of our volunteers, is just, she worked at another rehab center, and she's just full of information that is amazing and works well with young people too. So they just listen to her with open ears and eyes, and their little hearts just get all filled with good information about, you know, wildlife and how it affects us. And so that's the majority of it. Occasionally we have other groups that would like to see it, but mostly children.
So I wanted to ask you what other animals besides Spike might go out there, but just a comment too. I know for me as a psychotherapist and working with a whole spectrum of people, but especially looking at development of society and how we as individuals evolve, when we have contact with animals, doesn't necessarily mean physical contact, mm-hmm. but I think that development of awareness and understanding and respect for helps develop, especially in younger children, you know, having empathy develops consciousness, you know, mm-hmm. in our way of relating to the world. So I think the animal experience, especially the wild that we don't get to see commonly, is unique and an important aspect for people to understand how we all interrelate. So who else do you have besides Spike that goes out in your educational program? Carlene, you want to share?
Well, we have Sunny, our turkey vulture, and that's really a sight. You know, and unless you've seen one up close, you don't realize that the edge of their beak is white. And because vultures, the turkey vultures, rely on their sense of smell to detect the carrion for their meal, they have this kind of hole through their beak, through their nostril. And other birds, their nostrils are tiny, tiny little things at the base of their beak, right where their face ends and their beak starts. But these guys, you can see right through it. It's really funny. And then, of course, his wingspan is about 5 feet.
Wow.
So when he spreads his wings there, it's pretty amazing. And we have a great horned owl. We have a red-tailed hawk, a screech owl, an American kestrel, which is the smallest falcon in America. That's called Lady Kay. And until recently, we did have a blind king snake. And poor Slithers just recently passed away, but apparently he was about 19 years old. So he was a really good ambassador for the reptiles in California. And we do have a gray fox, too. And, you know, you might see a gray fox in the distance, but you normally don't see one up close. So Rocket goes to the educational programs, too, when he can. And
I love that name,
yeah,
Rocket.
Isn't that great? And we've also done programs at Whiskey Town in the summer when they have nature programs. We have it up in Castle Craigs. We have it at the Antlers campground, too. And the Salmon Festival coming up, we're always there. So we get out in the community, we get out of schools, we've been at the Rotary Club and other organizations that just want to know more about us. And Chester College also has a birding class every fall or every spring, I forget. But they know that when they want their students, they usually go out birding during that class, but if they want to know to see the bird up close, our educational program people schedule with the instructor, and the students in that class get to see them up closer than through binoculars, and they get to know a little more about their natural history also.
Now, do you guys go every year to the Salmon Festival in Anderson? And that's when is that, the Salmon Festival?
Third weekend, October 16th, this year. And they'll have their Return of the Salmon Festival, and people can go up and see wild animals and see how the salmon, the whole life cycle of the salmon, the wild salmon. And then also there will be a booth from Coleman Hatchery down at Anderson New Tech High, along with the Anderson Street Fair on that same day. So it encompasses a big venue, really.
So the salmon festival itself is at Coleman Fish Hatchery, yes, which is in Anderson. And then you have the street fair, which is in downtown Anderson mm-hmm. by the New Tech High School.
Yeah, well, New Tech High School is on North, and then the basic street fair is on West or East Center Street.
So it's those two locations,
yes,
in Anderson.
Kind of an L-shaped variety of placement.
And you guys will have the animals there?
They will be up at Coleman, I believe.
Coleman, yeah. That's what I want to make sure so people know. And there's probably a schedule for that day that people can tune into. So if they're wanting to find out when to show up at that event and be able to see the animals, see you present the animals, they can call you?
Well, what we do at Coleman, because it's not an educational program, it's an event.
Uh-huh.
What the handlers of the animals do is they schedule there are animals for like just 2 hours because there's going to be a lot of noise, a lot of activity, and the animals, even though they're used to being out in the public, they're mm-hmm. not necessarily used to being where there's a lot
of
crowds and activities.
Yeah.
So they'll only keep the animals there for maybe 2 hours. So we don't have a schedule of which animal is going to be there at what time right now, but
if someone wants to call your office, they could find out.
Yeah, they can. Okay. They can call. Yeah, what's your number?
378-1040.
Call Irish and close to the activity, and so she'll probably have a schedule of which animal will be where in case you want to see it. But usually when you go out to the Salmon Festival, you're there for several hours anyway. So you may catch more than one of the animals there.
Yes, yes. My impression is that these animals, are they in cages? When you are doing the educational program, how's it work?
The only one that's in a cage is the fox.
Mm-hmm.
The other ones are either on their handler's arms or they're on a perch. And, of course, you have to keep a 5-foot radius around them so that people don't get too close. Mm-hmm. But like we said before, you know, seeing an animal in a 5-foot, within 5 feet, is certainly something that you don't normally get to do because you can't get that close to them out in the wild.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's very interesting. It's unfortunate Slither has gone on to the next
snake heaven.
Yeah, snake heaven, whatever. But the red-tailed hawk, a great horned owl. I can't imagine the turkey vulture. That's kind of interesting. And falcon, the gray fox. What else am I missing?
Well, we had temporarily, we had an African tortoise.
Ah.
But he had to be rehoused because we didn't have the facilities to really adequate. I mean, they get to be 200 pounds. Mm-hmm. But I thought he was the most unusual animal I think we've ever had.
Right. And well, we do have a desert tortoise.
Okay. What was that? I couldn't hear you.
A desert tortoise.
Desert tortoise. You have that now?
I believe so, yes. And I know I'm forgetting somebody. They'll never forgive me. Of course, Spike, our albino.
Exotic.
Right.
Yeah.
Hunter. Oh, yeah, barn owl. I forgot.
Barn owl.
Mm-hmm. And we said the screech owl already, right? Do we have a pygmy owl? I don't think so.
Okay. But if people really want to be able to, firsthand, within a 5-foot radius, see these animals and experience them, they can get a hold of you and find out when you're doing these educational presentations.
Yes, and there will be some of them at our event on November 6th, bringing us back to that event.
Yeah.
November 6th, they will be at the Wind River Event Center, and they'll be safe on the stage. So they're, again, within a 5-foot radius, but they'll be on display so that people can, again, have an opportunity to see our wildlife.
Now, when they're there at the Event Center at Wind River for that event on November 6th, it's noon to 6 p.m., so should people be there noon so they don't miss the animals, or will they be there pretty much the whole time?
It's kind of like a rotational thing,
mm-hmm.
Again, because of the animals' comfort. We don't want to distress them. But it's on a sort of open house format, mm-hmm. coming in, going out. We anticipate some people will come in and see maybe auction items that they might like to bid on, but know that they need to come back for that auction, and so maybe they go and have lunch at Elements or whatever. But once they get in and they've come into the building and they see what we have to offer, they can come in and out
So that's a real perk. November 6th to show up at that.
That's
and you
be
do
fun.
Have the Coleman Fish Hatchery, which is October 16th. In Anderson as well, so two opportunities, as long as they tune into the timing. What's nice about the November 6th, it's an actual fundraiser for your organization, so it helps benefit the animals' well-being and care. So I want to ask each of you, of the animals so far that you have right now, do you have a favorite? Is there one that stands out to you or is closer to your heart just because there's something interesting about them? Which one? For Irish?
Well, I'm going to say two. One, Spike, because he's so different. Never have seen, well, albinos aren't completely uncommon in the animal world. An albino Steller's Jay is extremely uncommon because they usually don't make it.
Right.
So for him to have survived and so on, he was found in the Viola area in 2003 and rescued and brought in. And then my other favorite, I think, is Lady K, the Kestrel. She's an American Kestrel, part of the Falcon family. She's just a cute little thing. It's like a hawk, but miniaturized. She looks soft. We can't handle her, though. She's always with her handler, but a beautiful little bird and well-named Lady K.
Wow, that's wonderful. How about you, Carlene?
I'm one of the mammal people, so I love Rocket the Fox. You know, he's gorgeous and beautiful and intelligent, and his fur is just beautifully on him. He's a very, very healthy animal. And on the birds, I like the regal great horned owl, you know?
Regal.
Yeah, she's very regal. Kawani.
Kawani.
She's very regal. She sits there on her perch and turns her head around and looks at you, and she has those ear tufts sticking up there, and she just looks and acts like a queen.
Yay. That sounds so wonderful. Well, I want to thank you both for coming in the studio, taking time out of your schedules, and for the work you do in helping the wildlife.